nothing in the world that I like better than bacon and lettuce and homegrown tomatoes. Up in the morning, out in the garden, get you ripe when you don't get a hard one. Plant them in the spring, eat them in the summer. All winter without them's a culinary bummer. I forget all about the sweating and digging every time I go out and pick me a pig. Homegrown tomatoes, homegrown tomatoes. What'd life be without homegrown tomatoes? Only two things that money can't buy, and that's true love and homegrown tomatoes. Well, you can go out to eat, and that's for sure, but it's nothing a homegrown tomato won't cure. Put them in a salad, put them in a stew. You can make your very own tomato juice. You can eat them with eggs, you can eat them with gravy. Eat them with beans, pinto or navy. Put them on a side, put them in the middle. Put a homegrown tomato on a hot cake griddle.
Homegrown tomatoes, homegrown tomatoes. What'd life be without homegrown tomatoes? Only two things that money can't buy, and that's true love and homegrown tomatoes.
Tomato seed, 'cause I know what this country needs. It's homegrown tomatoes in every yard you see. When I die, don't bury me in a box in a cemetery. Out in the garden be much better, and I could be pushing homegrown tomatoes.
Homegrown tomatoes, homegrown tomatoes, homegrown tomatoes. What'd life be without homegrown tomatoes? Only two things that money can't buy, and that's true love and homegrown tomatoes. Homegrown tomatoes, what'd life be without homegrown tomatoes? Only two things that money can't buy, and that's true love and homegrown tomatoes.
FSK Petersburg. We're doing In the Garden with your host, Ed Bajarski, coming to us live from Juneau. I'm here, Oren Pearson. We'll be talking about seasonal gardening information, and we'll even be taking your calls a little bit later on. Support for In the Garden comes from the Flower Farm, and there are currently trees available down there. Cherry, apple, katsura, mountain ash, golden chain, maple, dogwood, and choke cherry. And they still have dahlias, bouquets, and even subscriptions of bouquets for never-ending color. That's open 10 to 5 every day except Wednesdays at 6 Rory Road, Papke's Landing. And let's give it a try here and see if we've got Ed on the line. Have we got you there, Ed? Ed, are you with us? Coming in loud and clear, I hope. Can you hear us there, Ed? Oh dear, oh dear. Well, we're hoping to get Ed Bajarski on the phone here.
Hear you, Oren.
Oh, you can hear. All right, there we go.
Yeah, we're okay.
All right. Guess whose fault that was? This guy's pointing two fingers at himself right now. That's me. But I figured out the right button. But we're connected. We got you, Ed. Thank you so much for your patience. And coming to us from Juneau on this beautiful, now sunny, basically, Thursday afternoon. How are things going up there?
It's pretty darn nice compared to yesterday, which was a three-hat day. Yeah, it was really wet yesterday, and we were planting in the mud.
Oh, dear. Yeah, well, I guess that brings us right to the, I would say, the most important topic of the day is, now that it is so stinking rainy lately, what does that mean for life in the garden?
We have to be more careful. We have to think about what needs to be harvested immediately and as well as looking at our garden and see how, yeah, how soggy it did get during the worst of the rain. Do we, gardeners, need to improve the drainage in those areas or build more hoop houses to cover them up so we can kind of control the moisture, which is, that might be the easier way for some if we can do that.
Mm-hmm. Well, so last week we were talking about garlic a lot, and we had kind of come up with some strategies for knowing when your garlic is ready to harvest, but another big part of it was when the rain comes, just get that stuff out of the ground, right? Would you say that now is just really the time to be harvesting garlic?
It really is, yeah. I mean, when we talked last week, Thursday, it was just starting to rain, I guess, but the forecast was wet. Mm-hmm. And certainly we've gotten about 5 inches here at my place, and I'm on the drier end of Juneau, so you probably had, maybe more like 8 to 10 inches down there. So, yeah, I've gotten most of my garlic out, and it looks good, and it's drying, which is what I want. Mm-hmm. There's a few in the ground yet that I'm going to harvest in the next day or two to get those all out and cleaned off. And, of course, now they're muddy where they were pretty nice and dry before. So we got to get those out. We talked about that last week. Clean them off, dry it out, cure it, so it'll keep. Then on to some of the other things that need harvesting. I mean, raspberries, of course, are ripening, and, of course, they're getting fairly slimy and or moldy. So those have got to be picking, I guess, in any break in the action that you can get. Cherries pretty much exploded. Whatever was left on the tree is cracked and rotting now because of that rainfall.
Right.
So, we're kind of out of luck on those.
Mm. So when it's that rainy, right when they're kind of ripening, do they take on a bunch of water and burst, or what happens?
That's exactly what happens. They get to the point of maturity, and if they are not picked, and if the rain comes down, they literally absorb the water through the skin of the cherries and explode. Mm. And then that allows in the fungus issues. So they're history.
Yeah.
So again, that's, we've got to hope for the best when the timing is, and we picked a couple of gallons just before the rainfall. I picked maybe another gallon after, but it was probably rejecting 2 out of 3 cherries or more by that time.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's kind of a shame.
It is, and this is where we live. It isn't like we're known for being prime cherry growing country.
I guess
so. Then looking in our greenhouses at what's happening there, and again, we've got to really work at the moisture control, ventilation. If you've got fans, that's great. I leave the doors open constantly so the air at least can blow through there. It is moist air, but even then, it isn't warming up much inside. But I want the ventilation. And air movement is better than no movement. Mm-hmm. So if you've got fans, turn those on. If you've got high and low vents, so again, warm air rises or such as it is, that helps keep them both open. Mm-hmm. And really don't close it up at night, because then it just gets even more moist as the temperature drops and reaches the dew point. And then you get condensation on the plants, on leaves, and that's a problem. Then look at the leaves themselves, remove any of those yellowing leaves, anything that's certainly showing any signs of mold, remove the flowers, spent flowers from stuff like zucchinis, if you've got those in your greenhouse, so they don't start to get moldy, and then that infests the fruit forming.
Right, so the flowers mold first on a zucchini?
They do, yeah. They are the most sensitive. It's something that's wilting anyway. Mm-hmm. It's the most easily attacked compared to the skin or the leaves of those. And then look at how thick is the vegetation in your greenhouse. Is there room? I mean, can you see through or between your tomato plants? Or is it this thick jungle where the light barely gets through, and which means that there's high moisture in between those plants? You may need to actually just thin out the leaves, or even remove plants if they're too thick. And that's easier to do, of course, if you've got plants in pots. Mine are in the ground, so I am removing leaves in between. But I'm also finding ripe tomatoes, which is a plus.
Yeah, that's nice.
I mean, this morning we picked a pretty good couple handfuls of cherry tomatoes, which didn't make it very far, but really tasty. So, again, that helps this ventilation and air movement is what we're aiming for in the greenhouse.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And really outside too, you know, if your plants are so thick, you know, maybe again you want to do some thinning there.
Right. I mean, so the air is kind of always ready to attack with, is it gray mold that's getting these leaves?
Well, yeah, I mean, there's multiple species of fungus and mold, and they're all around. They're in the soil, they're in the air, you know, the raindrops splashing on the soil splash mold spores up onto plants.
Right, okay.
So, again, that's where keeping the soil surface drier, like in the greenhouse, helps.
Mm-hmm.
So there you don't have that surface stuff happening. And if you can put a cover, even a temporary cover, or, you know, just have some PVC hoops over the more sensitive plants, will help hold a little bit of warmth, leave the ends open, and keep them from splashing up.
This time of year, is there any point in, like, heating your greenhouse to keep the temperature sort of above that?
We keep hoping that Mother Nature does it. I mean, I just have single-layer Visqueen, single-layer plastic on my greenhouses, so they heat up during the daytime, but then the temperature drops at night, where for those folks who have like a double layer greenhouse, then those will tend to hold heat more inside them.
Right.
Heating, I suppose, depends on if you had a wood stove and a big pile of wood, sure. Or if you can warm it up, and that'll help dry it out, certainly.
Right. Well, yeah, gosh. Okay, so there's a lot to it with greenhouse management. Removing flowers.
There is. And it's being out there every day.
Right.
And, you know, you walk in your greenhouse, you can feel the moisture. You can feel the heat, but you can feel the moisture, too, just on your face when you go in there. And looking at your plants. Your plants will tell you stuff if you know how to read them.
So what do people want to be looking for as far as leaves? Looking at their leaves, spotting mold?
Normally the lower leaves will start to turn yellow. That is the normal state of affairs.
Mm-hmm.
The plant pulls nutrients out of the lower leaves to feed the new growth. But that also means that those lower leaves, their defenses are weakened against mold and mildew spores, but they're also more attractive. Again, they're less... I suppose they become more tasty or less repellent to slugs, too. So, you know, slugs are the other big issue right now with this high moisture level. Slugs are everywhere. They're coming out of woodwork. They're active during the daytime.
Yeah.
So we need to be out there, whether you're patrolling with your salt or ammonia and water spray or putting out slug bait or stale beer, whatever you're happening to do, need to do that this year, this time, where when it was dry, it wasn't as much of an issue.
Yeah, that makes good sense. So what maybe we can do a run through of what you recommend as kind of the best options for slug warfare.
Okay, so cleanliness and keeping things dry, that's the ideal situation. So you're removing any dead and dying foliage, which can be the habitat and or food for them first.
Mm-hmm.
And then if you are, you know, at war against slugs, you know, going out in the evening with a spotlight or whatever, and you can spot the slugs and shoot them with a half and a half mixture of ammonia and water. That's very effective.
Mm-hmm.
And the ammonia serves as a nitrogen fertilizer for plants, too, although some plants are more sensitive to, they can be harmed by it. So even you may even dilute it down to a 1/4 ammonia to water,
mm-hmm.
so a little bit less. And the beer, certainly stale beer, cheap beer works. And just using, brown beer bottles set in the garden beds on their sides,
mm-hmm.
underneath the plants, so they're not, doesn't look like this wild party has just occurred. But leave an inch of beer in the bottom, and the slugs will go in after it and die in there.
Okay.
Otherwise, Sluggo, which is an iron phosphate product, clean, it's safe, and good for it to kill slugs.
Mm.
And it's safe for other animals too.
Right. I guess that's an important thing to consider too, is you don't want to be willy-nilly with some sort of
right, because birds will eat it if it's not. Again, and that's something you want to hide underneath a board, underneath a shingle or something like that. Certainly people use deadline. That is very hazardous to other animals. As you want to use that only around non-edible plants.
Mm.
Borees, slug and snail bait, likewise, is hazardous to other animals, too.
That's good.
So, again, you'd want to be very careful where you use it and all that, too.
Maybe we can say those again. These products are ones that, you, if you have pets or birds who are
right,
around there,
right. You got to make sure it's in an enclosed container, something the slugs can get to, but the other animals can't.
Gotcha. Okay. So now with the beer ones, the beer lures the slugs in, and then it also shuts them down once they basically can't handle their beer drinking?
Yeah, I don't know exactly the reasoning. Yeah.
Well, that seems kind of fun. Do you put those out overnight and one day and they've done their business, or do you leave them out for a couple
of days? It happens pretty quickly. Yeah, I mean, with the slug bait, I'll see these slugs, and you know, I'm using garden pots to cover the slug bait, and what I see is that the slugs, there'll be slugs inside underneath these things that were after they've eaten some slug bait, and they, if I poke into them, I can see the white, essentially the white stuff. They consume some of this stuff, and they get weak. I mean, that's where they hang out to die, basically.
Sure.
So that's kind of the effects, and again, then they fertilize the ground.
Yeah, right. Okay, so good. So slugs, you got to make good choices, but you've got to do something because they're on the move, on the march.
Yeah, they're here. They're all around us. We've got a few native slugs, and there's a whole lot of imported slugs. So the big banana slugs are the natives, and there's a little small one that's not too bad. But some of these others, there's a brown and a black. It almost look like corduroy pattern on the skin. Hmm. Plus, there's various different gray slugs also with different patterns. Hmm. So we've got an assortment. And where our native ones are not such a bad problem, these imported ones really are.
That's interesting.
So, yeah, it's like I said, cleaning up your garden. If you've got, like, rock walls or something like that, boy, that's great habitat. If you've got garden beds and boxes surrounded by grass, that's great habitat. So they'll hide out in there and then come up onto try to get in there. And some folks will try to use some copper strips around the edges of their garden boxes, which works. Copper, but you've got to get some of the better quality, like thin strips of copper flashing rather than the little lightweight copper tape doesn't last very long and isn't very effective, unfortunately, to stop the slugs from crossing that to get up into a garden box. Right. And then you've got to also be careful about not having leaves and branches hanging out over the edge of the boxes, touching down the outside to provide them with a pathway,
right,
or a ladder to get up onto the plants and into the garden boxes again.
Yeah, that makes sense. So, yeah, it all kind of comes down to maintenance, organization, keeping it tidy, keeping an eye out for opportunities, for habitat, for entry points.
Right. Yep. Yeah. Exactly. I mean, the wildlife is out there and it's wanting to eat our favorite plants.
Right.
That's kind of what happens. Mm-hmm. You know, whether it be porcupines and the deer and the bears and the other assorted stuff, where the big game you can have put a big fence up, and for the smaller game you've got to have a smaller fence or other defenses to keep them under control.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. That makes sense. Well, I think, what else should we be keeping an eye on? I guess that's sort of a good run-through of this week's kind of priorities in the garden.
I think we'll probably, we talked earlier about recording a program for next week about drainage issues and how to work on how to build French drains and that sort of thing, and what else people can do to improve the drainage in their soil so that it moves. And again, we might even talk a little bit more about, you know, the basic hoop house construction, because folks after this period, or especially after enjoying the sunshine, may well be inspired to build some.
Right. Yep. Okay. So those are topics that are coming up on In the Garden: hoop house construction, improving soil drainage. Yeah. So maybe.
Yeah, and then when I get back, I can talk about how good the sweet corn was in Minnesota and Wisconsin and their gardening conditions there, where it's 80 degrees right now and probably 95% humidity.
Wow.
Because we got to be careful what we wish for.
Yeah, no kidding. Yeah, that's some muggy living over there.
Right.
Wow. Okay, so you're going to be on the road for the next 2 weeks, but we will pre-record a show, and
Okay,
so that sounds good, and maybe that's a good note to end it on. And I'd like to invite listeners out there, if you have a question for an upcoming show, email me a question at orin@kfsk.org, and I can make sure that we can dig into that during this segment when we have this opportunity to talk to our friend and expert, Ed Bajarski. And for now, I guess we will say farewell to you, Ed.
Okay, sounds good. Thank you, Warren.
All right, thanks so much for sharing your knowledge with us. And thank you.
You're welcome.
All right, take care.
Bye.
Bye-bye. And thank you, listeners. This has been In the Garden. And we do want to thank our sponsor for In the Garden, the Flower Farm. Down there at 6 Rory Road on Papke's Landing. They're open 10 to 5 every day except Wednesday. They've got everything you need, you know, flowers, trees, all the best. And I'm sure there are infinite sources of knowledge and information about your own gardening. So check them out. Once again, thank you all very much. This is Oren signing off. Coming up next is High Country with Zach Christensen.
Well, you can go out to eat, and that's for sure. But it's nothing a homegrown tomato won't cure. Put them in a salad, put them in a stew. You can make your very own tomato. With eggs, you can eat them with gravy, eat them with beans, pinto or navy, put them on a side, put them in the middle, put a homegrown tomato on a hot cake griddle.
Homegrown tomatoes, homegrown tomatoes, what'd life be without homegrown tomatoes? Only two things that money can't buy, and that's true love and homegrown tomatoes. Tomato seed, 'cause I know what this country needs. It's homegrown tomatoes in every yard you see. When I die, don't bury me in a box in a cemetery. Out in the garden be much better, and I could be pushing up homegrown tomatoes.
Homegrown tomatoes, homegrown tomatoes, what'd life be without homegrown tomatoes? Only two things that money can't buy, and that's true love.
Homegrown tomatoes,
homegrown tomatoes, what'd life be without homegrown tomatoes? Only two things that money can't buy, and that's true love and homegrown tomatoes.